Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Uptown Beer Society, a craft beer gang dedicated to making memorable collaborations with New York City brands and breweries owned by people of color. Learn more on Instagram at Uptown Beer Society.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here on Beer Sessions Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 2nd, 2021. Yes, it's 2021. And we're recording remotely with some folks talking about the California Craft Beer Week that's coming up. So in 2020, a year ago, we didn't think that any of this would have happened. But the way that so many individuals in our industry, food, restaurant, and craft beverages have responded is quite amazing. And I think this is a very uplifting story of a very special place, the area around San Francisco, and just how they've morphed from San Francisco Beer Week now into the California Craft Beer Week. So let's briefly introduce the guests. Just say your name and where you're from. Start with Joanne.
Joanne Marino from the San Francisco Bay Area.
Great. And you're with the Bay Area Brewers Guild, right?
Correct.
And Kim?
Kim Sturdivant, and I'm at Pacifica Brewery, just south of San Francisco.
That's great. Wow. So so Joanne, we'll start with you. So a PR company, Bread and Butter PR, who we work with a lot, reached out and said, there's a great story. It's California Craft Beer Week. And I thought, well, is that San Francisco Beer Week? So bring us up to speed. Tell us how this happened. And then also how you got involved in this whole thing, because I know you've really paid your dues in the craft beer industry.
Yeah, well, I mean, San Francisco Beer Week has been around for over 10 years and is one of the world's largest, most successful beer weeks. It is an astounding activity that happens every February over 10 days. You know, there's hundreds of events. We hold a massive gala normally with over 100 breweries from throughout the Bay Area. And it was a real tough decision as we looked at at what happened this past year and what was to come. And, you know, for me, I've had a lot of Beer Week experience in general. I was one of the founders of Austin Beer Week, and I worked with the Texas Craft Brewers Guild back in the day, about 10 years ago. And I've been here in the Bay Area for the last 5 years. And I think what we really felt like is we didn't want to try to do business as usual, because it wasn't. The whole climate is entirely different. And rather than sort of set ourselves up for a situation where we didn't know if breweries were going to be opened or closed and what the state of everything was going to be, we decided instead to sort of turn outward and make San Francisco Beer Week a bigger umbrella and kind of expand it into California Craft Beer Week. And in doing that, we reached out to six other regional guilds in California and the state California Craft Brewers Association. And we basically came together to do a collective, essentially, with our guild leading the way and leading all the organizing. And it's been astounding to get the feedback from the other guilds. It's been astounding to work with all these different breweries across the state. And we're really just getting going with the listings now that February is starting to hit. And here in California, the stay at home has been lifted. So there's a lot of activity happening and it's just in time. Our thinking was it's going to be a long winter. How do we help breweries throughout the state and especially in our region? And this is what we came up with.
Well, that's great. So Kim, tell us about Pacifica Brewery. You know, what is it and what have you guys been doing during COVID?
Pacifica Brewery opened up in October of 2019. And there was a brewery here before myself. The Bay Area kind of as a whole got shut down mid-March. And they were able to get some PPP loans and things. The brewery I was at before here, we weren't really sure what was going on with the whole COVID situation and how safe it was to be together. So we all decided that I should just kind of leave for a few weeks and, you know, with the hopes of getting hired back in a few months or something like that. In the meantime, however, the brewer here left and I ended up getting interviewing for a job here, and it was a really good fit for me. So I hopped on it. It's really nice equipment. So being able to make the best beer I've ever been able to in my 15-year career so far. And we're still, you know, finding our place in the pandemic. We've been reopened for outdoor, shut down again, and we were just able to reopen last week. So we're just doing our best to navigate it all and not waste too much beer and make sure there's lots of fresh IPA on tap when we are able to open and get some cans into the market. Just really use it as a time to do the best we can, promote our brand, get some awareness out there, and kind of dial in all our flavors and processes with the brewery and with the restaurant. And we have a fantastic food program here. The owner is also the chef, and he's from France, and he's cooked all over the world. And we have things like filet mignon and, you know, lamb shank and tons of stuff that's all made from scratch. So it's really next level pub food. So it's a great spot. I'm really happy to be here.
Kim, is it more like a brew pub? Are you like a one brewer operation?
Yeah, exactly. At the moment, it's just me doing everything. So it's been pretty exciting.
Yeah. And Joanne, let's focus on some of the other stars of your region. I mean, California is a big state, and you guys expanding from just San Francisco Beer Week to working across the state. Who are a couple of the stars and some of the initiatives that you guys are doing to kick off California Craft Beer Week?
Well, one of the first things we decided to do was do a sort of a special auction event and offer guild boxes that are mixed packs that are really bringing together some of the leading stars of each region. So, you know, in LA, we've got breweries like Smog City and Beechwood participating. In San Diego, we've got Belching Beer and Second Chance and, you know, Lost Abbey and a lot of these like really, you know, really pronounced brewers, but also some up and comers. And we knew this was a fundraiser. So our number one goal was to get these boxes out there and sort of co-promote each other's boxes. And they really flew. I mean, we sold out the Bay Area one really went within a day, within 24 hours. Caught us by surprise, in fact, because we were getting ready to do a lot of promotional stuff throughout the week around the Bay box in particular. And then all of a sudden it was like, all right, so they're gone. But it just goes to show you, you know, people really want to support breweries in their backyard. We can only ship these within the state because of our state's ABC laws. And the demand is there. So we've sold out, we've just about sold out all the boxes. I think there's, you know, an Orange County box. Central still has some, and that's where Silva Brewing is another big brewery that is in the is in that Central Coast box. And so it's just exciting to see people really be passionate about their local craft brewery, and that's really the feedback we've gotten. And then here in the Bay, we also do what we call chapter collabs because we're such a big regional guild. We try to encourage, we have five different chapters, and we try to encourage each chapter to do a collaboration. And that's where Kim's brewery, Pacifica, has really been involved helping organize a lot of that stuff. And we've got a great, his chapter is part of the Coast chapter. We've got a great chapter collab coming out there, as well as in East Bay and San Francisco, North Bay and Silicon Valley. So it is about community and collaboration, so that really speaks to us.
Wow. Kim, we want to talk about that collaboration and some of the other things you've been doing for the Beer Week?
Yeah, so that one specifically, I teamed up with a couple other breweries. Discretion is hosting the collab. And so myself and a few of those people all kind of came up with a concept and a recipe And so we wanted to make a hazy IPA with all New Zealand hops, kind of drawing inspiration from the sharing a latitude with New Zealand and Santa Cruz. And so kind of like on exact opposite sides of the world. So we called it Flipped Turned Upside Down, which is a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reference, which I was pretty excited about coming up with that name. And everyone loved it, so we rolled with it. And it's using a hop blend from Brewer's Supply Group that they've come up with. That's a blend of a handful of New Zealand hops, as well as some Matuika that we got from Hollingberry & Sons, which is a hop broker up in Yakima, Washington. And all the grain for the collab is from Admiral Maltings, who are in the East Bay, just down the road from Faction Brewing. And they focus on all California-grown barley, rye, wheat, oats, and malt it all in-house, a very old-style tradition of floor malting and kilning. And they have really spectacular stuff. So great ingredients. Actually, really haven't had that much discretion beer, but I've heard amazing things about them. So I'm really excited to taste it. And I think it's either just finished or will be finished soon. So I'll be looking for some cans myself.
I'm sorry, I'll just jump in. It's actually got a local yeast from Giga Yeast, which is based out of Silicon Valley as well. So we do try to like support the local businesses. And then it was really exciting to be able to have Giga Yeast involved too.
Yeah, how would you describe that, like the sense of locality that you guys have, and since you're Bay Area, in the Bay Area?
I mean, for us right now, having Admiral Maltings in the East Bay with California grown grains, and they make a really quality product. Everybody's really happy to have this new ingredient to use and support them. So I'm super grateful that they exist. And then, like Joanne just mentioned, Gig Yeast is who we got our yeast from. And Jim is doing a phenomenal job down there. I'm having really, really great results with his yeast. And it's been so helpful having them as a resource during the pandemic, because his yeast is really high quality, and you get a lot of cells in your packages of yeast, meaning like it's really high levels of concentrated yeast cells. For like a pretty good price, and he ships for free in California. So,
wow. Hey, Kim, I'm going to go back with you. I just want to hear you've been a brewer for a while, and I know you're very connected in the industry. You want to give us a shout out to one or two other brewers or breweries that you've worked with, just so we can get a sense of the flavor of your region.
Yeah. You mean like breweries that I've worked for in the past?
That sounds good. Yeah.
Okay. I got my start at Marin Brewing Company, which is a little north of San Francisco in Larkspur, California. And they've been around since 1989. Their brewmaster, Arnie Johnson, is just an absolute legend in the Bay Area and really in the United States. He's won loads of medals at Great American Beer Festival, and pretty much anything he touches is going to be delicious. So I was really fortunate to learn under him. A lot of other great brewers in the Bay Area learned under him as well, including Tim Shasha from Cellar Maker. So I was there for about 5.5 years, and then I moved on to Social Kitchen and Brewery, which is in San Francisco. And that for a few years was a one-man show, and eventually I was able to bring on an assistant. But working there, I really got to focus on developing my own recipes and brands and marketing strategies and stuff. So that was a great learning experience for myself. While I was there, I got 2 gold medals for my English pale ale called Mr. Kites at the Great American Beer Festival. And I also coined the Brut IPA beer style, which sort of swept the world by storm in 2018 and quickly disappeared in 2019.
Well, congratulations for you, man. We did do a show about a year and a half ago about Brut IPAs.
Oh, cool. Yeah. No, it was a really fun experience. And at the end of the day, it really gave me an opportunity to converse with a lot of brewers that I don't think I would have been able to, you know, to really reach out to otherwise. And even a brewery in Argentina flew me down to give a lecture at a homebrew conference, as well as do a collab with them. So it was a really fun time. Sad to see the style not really succeed, but I'll keep making them once we're open up again and beer's flowing strong. I think we'll have some space to make some new brewed IPAs.
And I'm going to jump in, Kim, and say Kim has done a lot of beer wine hybrids very early on too that have been touted around here. I mean, they're just amazing. And I don't know, Kim, if you want to touch base on that, but I know that's another thing. You like to dabble in style innovation.
That's a great line.
I really do. Yeah. So I was at Social for about 7 years, I believe. And I just kind of left one day. I decided I needed a break between jobs because I'd never really done that before. So I took some time off and traveled around the U.S. and traveled to Europe with a big focus on drinking beer and visiting breweries and stuff. And as soon as I came back, I actually had a job lined up with Woods Beer and Wine Company, who are based out of San Francisco. And that was a really cool opportunity because they make wine as well as beer. And they've been also, like myself, been making beer, wine, hybrid styles for years. And their approach is really fun. They basically get all the grapes and smush them up and just cast the wort straight from the kettle right onto the grapes and use the yeast on the grapes themselves to do all the fermentation. So it's really just like magical. And the beer wine hybrids that are coming out of Woods are some of the most exciting and delicious and really intensely wine flavored of those types of beers that I've ever had. So that was really fun. Woods was a great experience. They make a lot of really wacky things, and they had a 3-barrel pilot system. So I was able to experiment on there and start making some of these humongously sweet pastry stouts that are kind of sweet in the nation right now. And even made a couple of raw beers, which you're literally just going from the mash tun straight to the fermenter and fermenting with a quite yeast from Norway. And it tastes like almost like vegetable juice with botanicals infused into it or something like that. It was really great to have the freedom to experiment with all that stuff over there. So now I'm at Pacifica. So that's pretty much my story right there.
Well, that's great. And Joanne, I want you to keep asking questions because you're good. I'm going to ask you a question now, Joanne. So going way back a year ago, I'm always interested in a Brewers Guild person. Mm. What tasks do you do usually for your job, and what were you doing differently or that was something you had to add on to make it through this last year?
Well, I mean, you know, most guilds, their primary function is twofold, focused on legislative and focused on marketing their members and their region to tourism. Regional guilds in California here, we have a number of regional guilds because the state's so big. The regional guilds are fortunate in the sense that we can, you know, really focus on marketing members, and we do a lot of events, and we're focused on, you know, just trying to help bring tourism to the Bay Area and help co-promote our members to local craft beer lovers. When COVID hit, it really turned a lot of things upside down in our region, where we have 12 counties compared to San Diego, which has one county, for example. And so when you have 12 counties suddenly calling the shots with whether breweries are opened or closed, and here in our region, we also struggled with, while all the COVID stuff was going on, we had wildfires, we had just a lot. It was, you know, an incredibly intense year. And it's also really hard to see smaller breweries struggle, and some have not made it. So I think it's been a real challenging year. And then, of course, at the same time, you have to think about how your guild can actually exist as an organization. You know, if you don't have a lot of savings and you rely on events and they're suddenly gone and there's no sponsorship anymore, you have to figure out another way. So, you know, the organization has to do some financial discipline to try to survive, to live another day, to see this through. And I don't think anybody thought last March, March 13th, when everything shut down here, I don't think anybody realized it was going to be close to a year that we are already right now. But you know, we do have, we do try to look and realize that with Beer Week in particular, while we were fortunate to get our Beer Week in before, everything started shutting down, the regional guilds, the other regional guilds, a lot of them had to cancel their Beer Week. And we also just knew that this year was not going to be the same. So rather than even, like I said, try to make it just like before, we just wanted to do something very, very different. And I think we've succeeded in that. And, you know, a big part of doing this too is trying to tell our story to state stakeholders, and to, you know, the counties. This is who we are as businesses. We're not like a bar. We have very high costs, to operate. We have high capitalization. We can't just, wing things, you know, suddenly, have to offer a meal and other times not offer a meal. It's been incredibly tough, but, you know, we're all trying to get through a tough time together. And I think that's where we really appreciated the opportunity to do something different and to try to, you know, really raise the profile of local California craft breweries to the state legislators and to consumers all over the state that we need help, we need support. And, you know, that's what we're hoping February is about, really bringing people out, reminding them that there's breweries in their backyard, because if they lose a brewery in their backyard, it's not going to come back. And breweries are essential to revitalizing communities. So we're all just trying to hang in there.
Wow, that's great. I was also going to ask you what's the role of festivals in funding the, you know, guilds?
For most guilds.
I mean, is that your main funding?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I worked for the Texas Craft Brewers Guild for 6 years doing festivals, and that was the primary source of revenue for that guild for the longest time. And I think over time, there was more money being made with sponsorships and trade, but this kind of, it's not just the festivals that went away. The economy's kind of been wiped. And so there's no sponsorship, whether you're talking trade or consumer sponsors. I mean, we had Hilton as a sponsor last year for San Francisco Beer Week. Well, there, you know, that's not a possibility, right? In this environment, right? So, I think it's a kind of across the board. Even the guilds that are focused on just legislative issues and lobbying state legislators lost trade sponsor revenues and trade member revenues, and it's also hitting at a time when their brewers are really hurting to pay some member dues, which is actually something we don't charge member dues right now. We may have to at some point, but we try to make our money through marketing. So that's another thing where we're having to step back and say, well, how can we still exist here? But this is a time where it really does show community matters. And I think we're one of the things we told our members is, you know, if we're going to do California Craft Beer Week, that's also an opportunity for you to sell to other parts of California. A lot of our members pivoted and they're shipping beer across the state. So that was the other flip of the coin there is like, don't look at this as like, hey, we're not focusing on Bay Area. Remember, you're focusing on also expanding your audience to consumers throughout the state as well.
Yeah. And Kim, for you guys at Pacifica, I mean, being a brew pub, how was it? Did you have to shift to doing more cans to trying to do distribution?
Yeah, exactly. When I got here, I mean, the space and the business model wasn't, you know, designed to do a lot of distribution. It was pretty much counting on most of the product happening in house. Sorry, I got a little water moving behind me, so that's not too loud. Yeah, like I got here and I mean, fortunately, when I was at Woods, we did a lot of canning runs with our mobile canning company that does a lot of Northern California. So I was really familiar with them. And there was a distributor that I worked at with at Social Kitchen. So I was able to link up with them as well. They're also a brewery. They're called Penn House and they do a great job. They only have a few brands in their portfolio and really give everybody a lot of good attention. So I was able to kind of plug all these pieces together and really help the company kind of, you know, at least make some beer, move some beer, get some exposure for our brand out there in the market in these times. So we've been really just like fortunate. Everything's working as well as it is at this point. So We're just doing the best we can.
Kim, are you in the brewery now?
I am. Yes.
So what are you making, or what's that process going on?
Our water filtration is back flushing itself at the moment. So I didn't realize
that's exciting.
Do that today.
You like yeah. that, don't you, Joanne?
I do. It's the little things.
And Kim, a question you would have for Joanne, whether it's something about the Brewers Guild or how it can help you, or I don't know, you just ask Joanne a question because you guys have a good rapport.
I think in general, something that I'm curious with about everybody is what have you learned throughout this pandemic in terms of maybe like virtual events or whatever that you would utilize moving forward post-pandemic when we are allowed to do things in person again? Have you had any experiences that you're like, wow, that was a really good idea, and we're just going to do this in the future again? Like, will we do guild boxes again in the future to ship around the state or anything like that?
Great question. Joanne?
Well, I think everything's on the table right now. I think one thing we're learning is everybody, the breweries that adapted and pivoted and, really realized that, they had to change their model, definitely are doing better, I would say. It's fair to say that's true for the most part. But I think one of the big things that's this intangible with guilds is that it is a community. And I actually think that's probably been the biggest challenge with what's happened over the last, this last year is, we had chapter meetings. We would have chapter meetings, at least quarterly, sometimes every other month. We did collabs throughout the year. We were actually about to launch something called Brewer Weekends in 2020 that were going to be little mini beer weeks for each of our chapters. So, East Bay would have a little beer week, San Francisco would have a beer weekend, Coast would have a beer weekend, and so on. And we had to scrap all that. And I think that's been the toughest thing is to try to maintain community when you can't actually hang out with each other. There's social glue that having an organization where you're all members of, and there's like a social glue around that. I think that's been the toughest thing that, everybody's missed. And I don't think we realized how important it would have been to like put a lot of that structure in virtually early on until we were well into it. And then it was, then things got really hectic and crazy again. But we do have like a way for our members to post and talk to each other. And that's, I think, a top priority to try to get that back because that social glue is what helps you survive these kind of tough times. So I would say that, the guilds, it's also been the biggest challenge, not just my guild, I'm on guild calls with guilds throughout the country. And that's been one of the biggest challenges, trying to stay connected with everybody and try to keep everybody's hopes up when it's been such a tough situation. And it's hard to know what to say when things are so tough that you're not really sure, words don't have as much meaning anymore. But there is a light, at the end of the tunnel now. I think everybody's feeling that. And certainly here in the Bay Area, we're feeling that. And, we all realize the situation is what it is. It's a serious situation. There's, a lot of people have died. So it's just trying to survive it, trying to remember we're here for each other. And, hopefully that message is getting out there.
That's a great point. We're going to take a short break here. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Uptown Beer Society. They're a craft beer gang dedicated to making memorable collaborations with New York City brands and breweries owned by people of color. Their Bronx Culture series featured three beers made in collaboration with Gun Hill Brewery, inspired by the Bronx and Latinx culture. Uptown Beer Society works with underrepresented brewers and beer bar owners to highlight and celebrate cultural gems that make New York City so special. Learn more about their unique beers and where to find them when you follow them on Instagram at Uptown Beer Society.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carbone, and it's a good time to become a member, heritageradionetwork.org. We're talking California Craft Beer Week with Joanne of Bay Area Brewers Guild and Kim of Pacifica Brewing. So, Joanne, you were just talking about the social glue that's missing. I totally get that. And everything I do now, it's like, whoa, if I'm going to my CSA pickup or something, you make new friends by running into them. Do you think any of the virtual events you guys have been doing can replicate, you know, social interaction?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think they're tough, and I think people are a little fatigued of virtual events. But there's also something to be said with at least trying to connect somehow. I know, like, some of our members have informally tried to, like, you know, visit or have some meetings in parking lots and things like that to try to, like, hey, does everybody want to just sit in our car and get a beer together? I mean, it's like whatever we can do, you know, but it's really hard too, I think, because as business owners, as small business owners, most of our members are, you know, small family owned breweries. In fact, it's really just trying to keep up with all the changes and all the pivoting and shifting with hiring labor and making sure, you know, a lot of breweries here are just tasting rooms, and we had a meal requirement. So suddenly they had to figure out food partners, and then there was openings and closings. So it's been really, I think one of the things that we set out initially was like, we don't want to tax our members. We don't want to, like, create yet another thing they need to do or feel like they have to do. But that, you know, that comes with the trade-off of missing that social glue. But when everybody's so overextended, that's what we're hearing over and over again. Everybody's overextended. You know, people had to let staff go, so they're also doing the work of, you know, three people instead of, you know, one or two like they used to, right? So I think that's the tough part, is everybody is trying to do a lot with a little, and just trying to stay so they can keep their doors open. So it's really hard to, like, say, hey, how about, you know, come to this meeting, that meeting, when everybody's, you know, pretty exhausted. So I don't know. It's tough. I think that's the thing I certainly miss most, is being able to connect with everybody in a meaningful way, and just seeing somebody's face and seeing them talk in person is so, it's so much more profound than a Zoom call, but that's what we got.
Yeah. Well, you guys are doing a great job. I'm really impressed with the California Craft Beer Week setup. San Francisco Beer Week. So let's talk about that, going back 10 years. It seems like it was very influential. How has the whole San Francisco beer scene changed in the last 10 years? I know that's also a broad question.
Well, I think in general, like most areas of the country, there was the nice big explosion between, you know, really the last 6 years up until the last 2 years. So, like, you know, 2012, 13, really to 2018, there was like a really big explosion of craft beer. When I got hired, there were 20 members, and our gala had about 80 brewers from throughout the Bay Area. Now we have over 150 members for the whole Bay Area, and I think we had like 135 attend the gala last year. So, you know, and also just Beer Week events, you know, we went from, you know, almost 1,000 events the last 2 years from when I started. I think there was about 400 or 500, somewhere around there. So craft beer really did take off. A lot of local, a lot of breweries opened up in little neighborhoods serving, you know, Kim, Social Kitchen, right? You remember, so when did Social Kitchen open, and what a great neighborhood place, right?
Oh, totally. They opened in 2010. I mean, when I started at Social, I think that San Francisco was kind of always hovering right around 10 breweries or so, like, in total. And, probably by 2015, in this like 3 year span, like 20 breweries opened up all at once, and it was really mind blowing to see, because San Francisco is, I mean, you know, it's the original place of craft beers. It's the Interstine Brewing Company and New Albion, just north of San Francisco, and it's just such a hard place for small business and restaurants and bars and hospitality in general, that for new breweries to kind of navigate all the terrain to get a business open, it's really tough. But people finally figured it out and were willing to take the risks. And all of a sudden we have this like nice bustling brewery scene. And so it's evolved tremendously in the last 10 years in San Francisco specifically, but really all over the Bay Area. And it's been awesome to see. I mean, right off the bat, San Francisco Beer Week is super successful. And it's just gotten bigger. It's just included a further region over the course of the years.
Wow. Hey, Kim, what are you drinking tonight? I want to hear about some of the beers that you're drinking or will be drinking.
Yeah, I got some yeast yesterday from one of my buddies, Dan, at Hop Dogma. And while I was there, we kind of swapped some cans of beer. So I'll be drinking one of his IPAs tonight. And we just did a canning run ourselves last week. So I got a hazy IPA with Ramaka hops from New Zealand that I'm really excited about. So I'll probably drink one of those as well. That's it.
That's great. And Joanne, what's one of the beers that you're drinking this week?
Well, right now, during the week, I'm trying to be good, but I'm hoping if I can get a little breathing room from planning for California Craft Beer Week to do a run down to Santa Cruz, where I can pick up some. We're packaging our guild box. Humble C is actually going to do the packaging for us, and then it's a great area to swing through to visit Discretion. New Bohemia is another great brewery down there. Obviously, Humble C. So it's always nice to take a road trip, and by doing that, I could probably swing by Half Moon Bay and Pacifica as well if I can break free this Friday.
Yeah, well, tell me about those breweries, because it really, like, so much of California is new to me. Like, I know I've met Roger from Faction Brewing. I know of Drake's because I know a number of brewers who worked there over the years. But most of the breweries that you've mentioned are new to me. So tell me about that Santa Cruz trip. Do you know any of those brewers, Kim, down in Santa Cruz?
Yeah. I haven't gone to Santa Cruz to drink beer too much. I just don't really go to Santa Cruz too often. But there's a bunch of breweries down there that I'll drink, I'll be able to drink at a beer festival or something like that. So Humble C is kind of like the big one. They do a lot of fun things. Santa Cruz Mountain's been around for a while. Trying to think of the others. I don't want to leave everybody out.
Play favorites.
Like I am.
Well, I can do a plug here if you don't mind. We have a website called Drink Bay Beer. It's drinkbay.beer or drinkbaybeer.com, however you want to get there. And we actually list all of our members there. And so, I mean, this is such a rich region. Like I said, we have over 150 members. And I mean, you can go up to Healdsburg and you can hit Santa Rosa, where, there's Fog Belt and Russian River, of course, and Cooperage and Shady Oak. And then you can swing down through East Bay and hit those places, bop into the city. You could bop out to Silicon Valley, where there's even more brewers. And then, go all the way down to Monterey, where Alvarado would be at the sort of the other end of the spectrum. So we've got a lot of really, really fantastic breweries in here. And, I would just say, it all started out of San Francisco, right? So, that's where our heart is, so to speak. And there's, there's great local breweries there, like Harmonic and Laughing Monk and, Bear Bottle is another hot one, Fort Point. We have no shortage of really, really great beers and even great brew pubs like Thirsty Bear and Bartlett Hall Black Hammer. It's just we have a wealth of fantastic breweries. So I, like Kim, it's really hard to just like say, this is the one I'm going to hit. It's hard to pull favorites.
Yeah, I think my head exploded when you asked the question.
Well, it's huge. I mean, hundreds of breweries. I'm totally down to come visit because I have not been in San Francisco in probably 30 years, and I love hearing about your beer culture out there. Kim, your innovation, the Brewed IPA. Do you mind just rehashing that for us? How did you come up with the Brute IPA? Because I remember, for a hot minute, everybody was doing that.
Yeah. I haven't had to tell this story in about a year. But
so now it's fresh.
Yeah, this might be a fresh telling. Basically, got hip to using an enzyme in the fermentation from my buddy Tim at Cellar Maker. And so I was making a triple IPA with it. And the strategy with that was to kind of be able to start with less sugar and finish with no residual sugar and end up with this 11% beer that wasn't as sweet as most triple IPAs tend to be. So I thought it was a really good strategy in that practice, and then wanted to apply it to see if I could make a 6-7% IPA with zero residual sugar and just be bone dry, with the idea of it having a drinking experience, you know, akin to like a really dry champagne. So I kind of molded over for a while, and one day, you know, brewed one and was like, all right, let's do this. And I was talking to one of my friends who's a big wine person and was kind of picking her brain about, you know, like, what can I call this? Like, what do people call really dry, sparkling wine? And she's like, oh, we call it extra brut. And so I was like, all right, that's a good name, you know, to call this style. So kind of had the concept and a name for it and threw it all together and made this super pale, bone dry, hoppy beer that was, you know, 6.5% or so, and posted it on Instagram, and everybody in San Francisco, all my brewer friends kind of hit me up and were like, yo, man, I'm going to come by and try this and see what's going on. That sounds really interesting. And Seth from Magnolia popped over pretty quick after, my buddy Phil from Triple Voodoo, Tim from Cellar Maker, John Galulli got some from Drake's. One of their employees, Brian Steck-Schulte, who was also a director of the guild before Joanne, came by and snatched some up. And so kind of like within a month or two, several breweries in the Bay Area were starting to experiment in making them. And fast forward like 4 months after that, our local paper, the SF Chronicle, did a big story about it. And that was when it really just spread across the world. And the next thing I knew, I was getting emails from people in Russia, all over the country, people in Brazil and Australia. They had all, you know, read the article, were asking me, you know, like, what are you doing? How do you do this? And it just took off. And, you know, kind of the failure of the style, I think, was that it's a really difficult beer to make, not only because of the balance of it, because it's such a strange balance of having no residual sugar in a beer with a lot of hops, you know, which add bitterness. But also just the technicality of dealing with all the kind of like the issues of using enzyme. And so I was constantly experimenting and upgrading my processes and constantly improving the beers that I were making. And I think other people, you know, would try to make one or two and they just wouldn't really turn out that good. So they just gave up on it. And that multiplied by, you know, all the breweries that tried it. I think, you know, so few of them actually were successful with it that eventually the consumers were like, these are terrible. Like, why are we drinking this? And it eventually got kind of a bad rap. So there's still a few people out there making them. And I know other breweries that are even making them and calling them other things, you know, like dry IPA or bright IPA or even just an IPA that happens to be really dry. So it'll be interesting to see if it ever comes back in some other form, or if, you know, maybe a hype brewery makes a really good one 5 years from now, kind of as a joke, and everybody really digs it.
Well, it sounds like it became the flavor of the month, but it sounds like you've actually quietly influenced that new style, and you're right. It's probably certain quality brewers will keep at it, you know.
And I can vouch for the fact that, you know, having had Kim's version of it and then trying other breweries, it's an expertise thing, right? You know, Kim's not going to toot his own horn, but I will. You know, he dialed it in and he worked hard at it, and you drank it, and it was. He was zigging when everybody was zagging, right? So everybody's starting to make these more fruity, sweeter IPAs. And then this came out and it was, you know, the brewers that drank it were just like, oh my God, I'm so happy I've got palate fatigue. I'm so happy to be drinking this and it tastes great. But it did require that people brewed it well. And when it started blowing up, the quality just wasn't there. And that happened early with hazies, right? I can remember having a hazy from a local brewer who I won't name, and they called it a New England style beer, and I drank it and I was like, wow, that is not a New England style beer. I don't know what they're thinking. But that's the danger of some of these, you know, trendy styles, is that if they're not in the right hands, the consumer's going to get, like Kim said, they're going to get a bad impression of it when it's actually a really fantastic style. It just has to be done well.
I'll give you an example. About 12 years ago, cask beers on the East Coast were becoming popular, as well as Imperial IPAs. And one brewery, which I'm not going to name, they wanted to go in bars and do a pairing where you had their Imperial IPA on draft and then the Imperial IPA in cask. And you're like, that is the worst idea ever. And it's not a way to showcase any of these styles. But do you have to deal with that as a Brewers Guild? Like, do you have to, like, ever take a brewery aside and say, guys, why are you guys screwing up?
Well, I will quote John Galluli from Drake's, because he was on our board for a while now, and he's passionate. And when we were coming up with updating our mission as we evolved into a regional guild, his big thing was, like, the number one thing has to be, you have to make great beer. Like, that's got to be the number one thing, because you're reflecting on the whole region. If you want to be part of this, then, you know, we have to help everybody make good beer. And I don't care if we're competing against each other. You know, that's not what a guild, and that's not what our community is about. So I think that's, that's part of our ethos. There's a couple of, like, raw ingredients that are part of our makeup as a guild. One is to help each other make great beer and be supportive. Kim is always on the forum, you know, offering advice to people or helping somebody out who needs yeast at the last minute or whatever it might be, and giving people advice. And then the other is diversity and inclusion. That's a big part of our DNA. We are here in the Bay Area, so we love that everybody's individualistic. You can walk into one of our members, you know, could be, you know, really focused on kind of a heavy metal feel and vibe. Another could be focused on wine country style, and there's all different personalities, and we celebrate that. That's one of the reasons we formed Chapters, because we didn't want San Francisco to change. We didn't want East Bay to change. We didn't want North Bay to change. We want to celebrate that diversity that we have in this region, and we want to foster that kind of grassroots connectivity and community with each other. So, I don't know if I answered your question, but that's where I come from. That's where my heart is, and that's where the brewers here, that's where our heart is as a guild.
Wow, that's great. Any final comment? How about this? Each of you say a final comment or question for the other, whatever is on your mind or we haven't talked about. Kim?
I'll just kind of keep going with what Joanne was talking about there, of like how the Bay Area is such a diverse region, and it's all types of people, and it's something that we really celebrate. And, as craft beer has thankfully and, you know, really boldly kind of started this conversation about inclusivity in our industry, because we need more of it. And, we just want to have a big party and make sure everybody feels like they're welcome to come and come out here and have fun. And it just makes going to different breweries with all these different types of personalities, not only in terms of like the human element, but in terms of like the actual product itself, is something really special. And I think the Bay Area amplifies that as well as anywhere in the world, if not the best. So I'm really proud to be a part of this scene over here.
And I will say, in the New York City Brewers Guild, which I know pretty well, the new director, Ann Riley, is great. And just last year, the last year and a half for their pre-COVID events, they were definitely going more with those themes of diversity and inclusion. And they said the same thing. It does really reflect the city and the members. And before, it wasn't the case. So it's, I guess you guys are at the forefront, right?
I hope so. We like to be at the forefront. But I personally want to ask him when they're going to have their first beer dinner, because I really think that my question's got to do with, like, wanting to go over there and try that pairing of Kim's beer and their French chef's food. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, we're going to do a pairing throughout Beer Week. So every day it'll be available. And we're going to offer four packs, like a mixed four pack to go. If people don't feel comfortable in eating in our outdoor space, they're welcome to get the beer pairing dinner to go. And so we're still working on the menu, but it's going to be super good. And I guarantee you some homemade Dungeness crab ravioli and I think like a pork tenderloin with something going on, and just to name a few of the dishes.
Well, you guys are really making me want to come out there. So I bet we will end up out there, and we'll definitely do something with you guys again. Joanne, how do people find out about California Craft Beer Week and the Bay Area's Guild one more time?
Yeah, so California Craft Beer Week is at CA, as in California, CA, craftbeerweek.com. And they can also go to Drink Bay Beer, drinkbay.beer, for the guild overall. And I look forward to having you next year, San Francisco Beer Week. We're going to hold you to it.
I'll be there, Joanne. Thank you. And Kim, thank you so much. I am so impressed, and I'm so glad to have met you. And we will definitely talk again. So thanks to everybody. Big shout out to Armin and Caroline, our team here, for setting this up. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host on Beer Sessions Radio. Thanks to our guests, Joanne and Kim. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.